Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How's it going? Welcome to the Swim Podcast, Episode 2. I'm Daniel P. Carter. The someone who isn't me this week is Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour. And when Slipknot were over here in the UK recently doing a run of arena shows, I caught up with Corey on his day off and we hung out and spoke nonsense all afternoon into the early evening. And we recorded a lot of that, most of which you're going to hear now. Actually, no, a tiny chunk of which you're going to hear now for the next hour or so anyway. And we kind of covered a bunch of different topics, ranging from all the different stuff he does to outer space, which is good. We were eating at the start of the podcast, so if that sounds weird, I apologize. Enjoy.
So you're number two.
Interesting. Yeah, well.
That sounds...
You're not the first to say that me, so.
Right, so as an intro, singer, songwriter, frontman, Slipknot and Stone Sour, actor, New York Times bestselling author, husband, father, raconteur, bon viveur.
Yeah.
Polymath. Modern day Renaissance man. You've got a lot on your plate, man.
I do. Thank God it's a big plate. Because I don't know if I could, handle any more, to be honest. But you know, I mean, you take what you can get. You know,
I mean, there's a list. It reads pretty well.
Well,
you got me mildly happy with that.
I'm very happy. You know, like I mean, it's kind of cool because I've kind of hit that point in my career where I'm getting to do a lot of stuff that I'd always wished I could do, you know, like the acting, for example. I mean, that was a total accident. That wasn't me like going out and trying to do that. Like that came to me and I was able to make it work. And, you know, it's cool. As weird as the film is.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still a very, I loved the experience. I loved being able to, you know, kind of learn and just watch and really get a feel for it. And it was awesome.
Is it something you're going to go into more, do you think?
I'm going to try, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where if the parts come and I've got time to do it, I'll absolutely do it. But I'm not going to, like, you know, semi-retire to chase down movie roles, you know?
Yeah, time's got to be slim right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's still super busy. I mean, I've got, you know, a handful of months off coming up, but... even then I've got, you know, stuff kind of, you know, starting to fill up the non-show days, you know? So, I mean, if it works and I can make it work, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I mean, well, you're over here for the Slipknot stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I came to one of the Ali Pali shows.
Yeah. That first, and the second night was even better. Like, it was not to rub that in your face, but it was really good, man. We'd never played there before, and to see that many people on the floor, man, was just...
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, it was rammed, you know? It just, there was something about those shows that just felt almost like a throwback to when we first were starting to come over here, you know, playing the Astoria and just having so much fun. That's what those shows really kind of had, that vibe of just pandemonium. Like, I mean, and everybody on Twitter had just had so much fun. So
yeah, it was good vibe. I got the train back, and it's interesting because I feel like I'm kind of amongst it all, just listening to the chatter.
Yeah.
And it was, you know,
all positive. Yeah. Good.
It was cool, man. I thought it was really sound. I thought, you know, it was The screens I thought were awesome.
Yeah.
I liked it as well because it made a big change from the, you know, the all singing, all dancing pyro.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
you've had a lot of, and it could almost be that it gets to the point where it gets relied upon.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought the show didn't need it. I thought the set was amazing. But yeah, the screens were rad, man. Just like that high, super glossy, really saturated color.
Yeah.
And I thought it was quite, you know, it was really bold.
Clown put a lot of work into really shaping a lot of the visuals for each song. Like, I mean, he was night and day working on it, really making sure that, you know, it was put together really well. Because when we started talking about it, I mean, we were talking about it when we were in Mexico City for Knotfest. Like, how can we, you know, how can we differentiate next year from this year, and where can we go, and what can we do? And that was one of the first things that we talked about, was really, you know, trying to get even more visual with the art and the creativity, and just giving a certain sense, like, and not detract, like, kind of like you said about the pyro and stuff. Sometimes that can just take away from what the band is doing. Mm. And for us, this was about just adding an extra element so the band still shines through, you know, because we are still such an energetic band, you know, it's even at our age. So it was really cool to be able to augment that with something that we felt really passionate about, you know. And when we started talking about it, the whole band was in on it and really dug it, and, you know, clown around with it, and it looked really cool.
Yeah, man.
It was almost like a living backdrop, you know?
Yeah, and I thought, like, you know, I said about the saturation of it, it was so, so bold, the colors, and I thought it was rad as well that it was going from, like, almost microscopically, like, you know, really tight stuff of insects to just, like, the cosmos, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, both ends of it.
Exactly, rad. Yeah, and that was Clown's, you know, that's Clown's mind. What you're seeing on that screen... That's what I have to deal with every day. So,
But has this all been a good time, this tour?
Yeah, it's been. It's a lot of travel, you know, which really can. You've been on tour, you know, it can kick the crap out of you.
Yeah.
It's been a lot. I mean, we were really looking forward to getting here, and not just London, but Brum. Cardiff was off the hook. It's been really good to get back to the UK, because, you know, this is kind of like our second home. And going through Eastern Europe, Northern Europe, to kind of get there, I mean, it was like it was super cold. Here's the bit of irony. We got sunshine when we got to the UK. Like, the really, honestly, kind of for the first time. And it was like, whoa, you know? So we all kind of stood up and kind of reinvigorated us, and it was good.
So how much more have you got of this run?
Honestly, we've got tomorrow in Brum, next day Leeds, day off Belfast, and then we go home.
Yeah.
So 3 shows, 5 days, which, I mean, that's nothing, you know, but we've already been over here for like a month. So, and then we've got 3 or 4 months off before we start doing the stuff for the summer in the States. So sadly, we won't be over for the festivals. But
I don't think that's a bad thing.
You get a lot of people miss you, man. You know, like especially over here where there's so much excitement. You know, and there's so many other bands trying to, you know, kind of, you know, it's their time.
Give
so it's like
else
absolutely,
a chance,
all right? Absolutely. I know, right? We're so greedy.
I think it's a good thing to do. And then you're doing more around the U.S. then?
Yeah. We're doing about... We haven't announced anything yet, but we've got almost a 2-month thing that we're setting up that should be pretty cool. I won't give you too much detail, but
that's cool.
That's starting in June, run to the first week of August, something like that. So
I think I might know what that is as well.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just hope we all survive that one. That should be interesting. But we're looking forward to that too.
Yeah, that'll be a good time. Mm. You know, I said at the start, it's almost as a joke, like you read through this list of things that you do, and it does make me wonder, like, how you, because it's not like you're just dabbling in these things. Like, you know, you've done
three books. I'm working on the fourth. That's going to be intriguing. And the concept for the working title is America 51, and kind of a play on Area 51.
Yeah.
Just because my country's so fucking batshit crazy these days. Mm. And my publishers are so excited about it just because of the state of things in my country right now that they kind of want me to like hurry up and write it so they can get it out and capitalize on it, which I get it. But at the same time, I don't like to rush anything, you know, like just so I can meet some sort of, you know, try to slot it into some sort of cultural thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if it comes together quick, it comes together quick, you know.
I mean, so what's the vibe of it?
It's just basically kind of just talking about the various neuroses and psychoses and other Z's around America, you know. I mean, there's going to be a lot of positive stuff, but there's going to be a lot of negative stuff because
it's the home of the conspiracy theory.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's the home of a lot of shit, to be honest, man. I mean, I was kind of taken aback. Like the last couple of years have been rough for me as an American, you know, just kind of watching everything unfold from everything from the rampant police brutality. Mm. And I know it's been going on for a while. It's just now kind of started to really get a lot of ink, you know?
Yeah. Do you think it's more a case of that people are more prepared to talk about it now? And plus, shit's getting filmed now.
Well, I think that's one of the good side effects of the fact that, you know, technology has been able to catch up with it.
Yeah.
My problem, though, is that nobody's getting convicted. You know, for every 10 cases you have, maybe 2 get convictions, you know? And so people are, you know, and then people wonder why everyone's angry, because there's no sense of justice right now. There's no sense of accountability. And that's one of the reasons why, and that kind of shifts to the other side of things with the political climate right now,
which is
unbelievable.
As an outsider watching what's going on, you know, I don't want this to turn into a bit where I'm you know, ragging on your country.
Oh no, trust me.
I have, you know, I mean, politics in general worldwide is fucking crazy anyway. But at the moment, it just seems like the thing with Trump is mind-blowing.
Yeah,
man.
It really is. And there's so many, you talk about conspiracy theories, there are so many conspiracy theories around that.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. Somebody hit me up to the one a couple of days ago where there's this whole conspiracy theory that Trump signed on to the Republican Party so he could talk all this madness just so he can make sure that the Democrats win. Yeah,
okay.
Because for the last 30 years, he's been a member of the Democratic Party.
Really?
Oh, I don't have the facts and figures in front of me. Like, I don't know where the shift came or if there was a shift, but you can't say that much crazy shit without going, you know, because I mean, between him and Ted Cruz, oh my God, you know, but it's everybody who's running for the GOP. Ben Carson, who at one point I thought was the more level-headed of all of the candidates, the shit he has been saying lately is unbelievable, you know? Like, I'm just like, what am I seeing here, you know?
But it's mind-blowing that to some of the traction that he's actually getting, though. That's the scary thing. That even if this is a conspiracy theory where he's like, I'm going to turn up, I'm going to say I'm with these guys, and then I'm going to spout garbage so that everyone goes, we're not going to it looks like it's backfiring.
Yeah,
everyone's
well,
like, yeah, this guy is talking sense. It's like, and that's
well
scary.
And another one of the theories that was out there was that he was really just going to use this as a platform to
get a second series of the Apprentice.
Well, not just the Apprentice, but like a whole other show entirely.
For real?
Yeah.
I was joking.
No. It was a different show aside from the Apprentice, because they've gone with Arnold Schwarzenegger for the Apprentice. Now, between the book that he just put out and the new show that he was talking about, like this reality show where they follow him, he was just going to use this as a way to kind of promote that. And now that he's like, when he's just like, well, let's just see how far we can take it, shall we? You know?
Yeah.
And it's
like a social experiment.
Exactly.
Imagine if it
I'm sorry, but I don't need that with my president, you know? Like, the joke's on you. Well, fuck you, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's a really, really weird, dark time in my country right now.
I think it is worldwide, to be fair.
It's definitely a global thing. But it seems to be a little more concentrated in America, just because there's really no censor. There's nobody really holds anything back anymore, whether it's good or bad, to be honest. And I don't know if that's the bad end of social media or whatnot, but now, and I was talking about this actually the other day, because if you look at some of the things that some of these, the candidates or the hopeful nominees have been saying,
yeah,
the fact that they've gotten away with it, whereas 20 years ago they'd have been shut down like nobody's business.
Yeah,
it's kind of gives you a sense of what's offensive now. Because of social media, in my opinion, people are so quick to call offense to something. That's offensive. This is offensive. But when everything is offensive, nothing is.
Yeah.
You know? Like the noise is so loud. Yeah. All of this real shit is getting through and nobody's listening because they're so focused on why the new Star Wars is offensive. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it's really the case of, who's going to stand up and say something? And even if they do, who's listening? Because apparently it's fucking scoring points for people. You know, I was honestly shocked at the backlash that Phil caught because of the Sieg Heiling and the white power. I was like, really? You're offended by that. Meanwhile, you've got all of these people, these political candidates saying, you know, kinder versions of basically the same fucking thing.
Yeah. It's
pretty unbelievable. So it's like, I was just as offended as everybody else was, you know, but I wasn't there and I didn't see I haven't seen the footage and I just refuse to because I'm not going to perpetuate it. You know,
it's pretty heartbreaking.
I know. And that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And I just did a whole thing with The Guardian where I talked about it, you know. But it's almost like people are just picking their spots, you know. Like they don't want to say anything until they feel like it's the right time to say it. It's like it's easier to say that about Phil than it is about Trump or Cruz, you know.
Yeah, but then a lot of that might be to do with the fact that that feels a lot closer to home.
Yeah.
Do you think in the sense that these people haven't invested time in Trump and his I'd like to hear it if he does make music, but what I mean is, like, you know what music is like. It will soundtrack your life.
Yeah, yeah, and, exactly.
And then if something happens like that, it's heartbreaking. You almost feel betrayed. And I that whole thing, I haven't even spoken about it. I've spoken with friends about it.
Yeah, same here. You know, the Guardian thing was the first time I'd really talked about it. And of course that turned into 47 different news stories.
Of course.
Yeah. Cause nobody can do their own work these days.
It's a bizarre situation. Yeah. We're in it, the way that everything is. So, you know, the internet is a beautiful thing and it should be this incredible means of connection, but it just seems that everybody once again just seems to have got it and using it it's super divisive now.
Yeah,
you know, it's easy for, you know, it's great that everyone's got a voice, but it would be better if most people didn't for a while. Within certain things, obviously, and that's not making any excuses for the stuff we.
You know,
just
it should give
about,
it should give people a voice who actually have something to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than trolls who just chase people down and try to tear them down, you know. But unfortunately, that's the good and bad side of free speech.
Yeah.
To be honest, you know, I mean, I don't agree with a lot of the things that people say in America, but that doesn't mean they don't have the right to say it.
Yeah.
It may be offensive, you know, but sometimes that's the protection you pay for, you know.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, it's true.
Well, I think, you know, It's, yeah, the internet's weird, man.
Oh, you ain't
kidding. And once it gets, you know, it's only going to grow and grow, and then it'll become its own thing, and it'll be totally AI.
It'll become self-aware, Skynet, Terminator. Here we go.
In all seriousness, have you seen some of the stuff that's happening on that front?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's crazy.
It's like, you know, the whole Google AI thing is amazing, but crazy.
Yeah.
They just did that thing where it played that game, is it Go? Which is like...
And it
beat the European champion 5-0.
Really?
Because they set up the algorithms and then it played itself.
Yeah.
And worked out all these different plays and all the different variations of how a thing can go. So, you know, you've already got like AI that are masters at chess and now this game is way more...
Oh, Go is
it has way more outcomes. Apparently.
It's the hardest game on the planet. Apparently, yeah. It's the most difficult.
Apart from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, and hey, let's not go there. All right, we still got a long way to go before Google AI can roll the 12 die and really sort it out.
Yeah, but it's man, you know, I look at some of that stuff and I listen to a bunch of podcasts and there's one guy in particular, Duncan Trussell, who has a you know, he'll talk about this stuff a lot and it then makes me go and look it up and it's fascinating and I look at a lot of the kind of robotic stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. You know, we always make jokes about, you know, Skynet's going to be self-aware and it's coming.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that's going to be a huge thing in history, man. That's going to be a turning point.
Because, yeah.
Because then what?
Well, it raises amazing philosophical questions.
Yeah.
One of which is, now how do you treat it? You know? I mean, we can't even treat each other well.
Yeah.
So how do you treat that? You know?
Yeah, but
is that the thing that brings the human race together? Is dealing with something that you know?
Yeah.
I mean it's the implications are amazing.
Or is it the next stage of human evolution?
There's that. We're already augmenting our bodies in certain ways, you know? Who's to say that you couldn't, and who's to say that you as a being couldn't then become two identities with one being...
consciousness is being put online and...
Well, there's that, and then there's the fact that if you could augment your body a certain way, you can make room for basically two different consciousness. Like yourself, and then, you know, the co-pilot, you know, because it's just a part of your body now, as far as like robotics goes.
Yeah.
So it's taking cyborg to a whole new level.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's happening.
How the fuck did we get here?
It's cool. I find that stuff fascinating, man.
Oh, I do too. It's terrifying, but it's interesting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when something like that becomes aware, then it's going to start. Then you're going to get into the discussion of souls and what makes a human spirit rather than, you know, like the physical body that we are and our consciousness. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
Well,
could all backfire though, and we'll all get turned into hammers.
Yeah. Well, or you know, Duracell
living batteries.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Here comes the Matrix.
Yeah. Right. It's funny, man. But which leads nicely to the fact that you and myself, so I know you won't take offense, but you're a huge sci-fi nerd.
Quite. Oh, absolutely.
The Doctor Who thing was amazing. I remember where was it? I saw you. Was it when you were over here last?
Yeah, when we came over here, yeah, because I did it.
Because you'd just done it.
Yeah, I'd just done it in Cardiff.
You were slightly excited.
Yeah, that's to say the least, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I wish you could have been with us when it finally aired, man. I had the whole family, like, on the couch, you know? Where it's like, my son is a huge Doctor Who fan, too. So he was just like, is this the one? Is this the one? I'm like, yeah, here we go. And then... hearing the screams, he's like, is that you? And I was like, yeah. Like, that's so cool. And then having my name in the credits I just sat back on the couch. I was like, oh, that was fantastic. You know, I had to watch it like 3 more times just to make sure that it was real.
That's
so
good. And you, like I said, before we started, I said, you're such an Anglophile. It blew my mind a bit when we spoke about it that first time and you were saying about how you were such a huge fan of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Because it feels so English. And, you know, you look back at it now and
and some of them it looks pretty rubbish.
Yeah.
But it just seems so ingrained in English culture that I didn't know. I mean, it's obvious it must have done, but I didn't know that it translated over.
Well, and the thing is, not a lot of people here realize that it's been playing on public television, the PBS, for years, okay. You know, to this day. I mean, it's still affiliate. I mean, they play it on the BBC America now, obviously, but PBS in America, like Iowa Public Broadcasting, that's where I saw it.
Okay.
And it's been playing there since 73 or 74. So since I grew up watching it, you know, I grew up with Tom Baker, you know,
that was my
doctor.
Mine too.
You know?
He's the best.
And the thing is that, you know, you think about the quality of the production. It's not that much different from the original Star Trek show.
Yeah.
And when
true.
You really get down to it, because the only thing that differentiates that is the fact that Star Trek was shot on film, whereas a lot of the Doctor Who stuff was shot on video, you know, like at least the interiors.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why it looks aesthetically a lot different than Star Trek. But really, I mean, if you put those productions back to back,
yeah,
I mean, you know, when the Enterprise is being shook and that's just them kind of falling over themselves. I mean, you know, that's the same kind of thing you get with Doctor Who. And that's why I think that's one of the reasons why I was so endeared to Doctor Who, you know, was just the fact that it felt like a really intelligent kids show, you know, and it didn't assume the intelligence level of the people watching it. It just did its own thing. It wasn't condescending. It wasn't trying to be more than what it was, which was just a fun sci-fi show. And I think it's one of the reasons why it's so different now is because you've got generations now who have grown up on it. So it's had to evolve into what it is and become a little more sophisticated.
Yeah.
But the essential mission of the show is still the same. As long as the doctor's there, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it.
It's rad as well. Like I've watched it with my kids and they would be the age when I was and and there would be that, you know, I used to watch it from behind the sofa half the time.
Which
is great, you know, and my daughter will watch it, you know, recent stuff and we'll have a cushion like this.
Yeah.
And watch the whole thing like that. And it's great. It's amazing. It's funny you say about Star Trek as well. Like, and I mean, that was kind of, I never really went there with that. I watched the originals a bunch when I was a kid, but I didn't get into all the later, you know.
Yeah.
Or your Deep Space Nines and whatnot. I was strictly...
Yeah, I mean...
I was always Star Wars.
Yeah, same. See, I was the same way.
Yeah.
In recent years have I really come to appreciate what Star Trek was. Because in a lot of ways, Star Trek was such a social commentary on what was going on in America at the time. And I'm talking about the original series.
Yeah.
And then Next Gen was kind of an expansion of that. Because all of a sudden, it's Star Trek without all of the 60s censors being able to really say poignant things. And, I couldn't really appreciate that as a younger kid. I mean, I watched it still because it was science fiction. But as the years have gone on, I've come to really appreciate the kind of future that they were trying to put out there. You know, no religion, no skin color, no misogyny, no anything, just, you know, really trying to create that utopian society. And then trying to, you know, once we've got our stuff together, trying to go out into the universe to find and discover other peoples, other planets, other species, races. I mean, I just thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think about that as well? About the whole thing, about in real life? About the way things are, about the exploration of space and whatnot. What's your take on the whole? You know, you said about America 51.
Yeah.
What's your take on it?
I don't think we're being probed or anything. Like, I mean, I watch Ancient Aliens for the laugh factor, because every episode of Ancient Aliens starts the same. Starts strong. You're like, huh. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then it just degenerates into Like the one about the Nazis is probably, I mean, well, there's three of them. Oh, it's fantastic. Everything the Nazis had was from the aliens, you know? And they always get Giorgio Tsokalis, who's the guy with the hair. Okay. And he comes out and he's just like, it's the best line he ever said. Was they were talking about religion and, you know, how the gods appearing to humans was actually aliens and stuff. And he's like, am I saying that angels came down from heaven to give fire to humans? Of course not. What I'm saying is aliens came down from space to give fire to the humans. It's completely different. And I just, I'm fairly certain I spat whatever was in my mouth out, and I had laughed for at least 15 minutes. It was just the delivery and the conviction. It's so good. But, okay, but the other side of that is you're going to tell me that this universe is so big and we are the only life in it.
Oh, it's
absolute rubbish.
Impossible.
Absolute rubbish, yeah.
And then as soon as you start like getting into the idea of parallels to that universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it doesn't have to be extraterrestrials. It could be interterrestrial.
Well, exactly. And people automatically assume that the worst thing that we have ever done is bullshit ourselves into thinking that we're the only types of life that can ever exist.
Yeah.
You know? Now, this is just based off of, life forms that can exist using oxygen, where there are examples on this planet of living organisms who can live off of nitrogen, can live off of, carbon dioxide, like all of these things.
Yeah, they found that cave recently where there was a weird spider that just, it didn't need oxygen, it just lived on. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, you're going to sit here and tell me that this is the only way that we can have, like, I credit the astronomy community for finding, like, the what they call the Goldilocks planets. They're in the Goldilocks zone, which is a certain distance away from the various, stars and whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that there can't be life on the other planets. We're just looking for the planets that we can live on because we know we're shitting on this one.
Yeah, right. You know? We need to find another one quick.
So it's that's why you go ahead and you keep your Goldilocks search up. But I guarantee you that for every one of those Goldilocks planets, there's got to be life on something else. It just doesn't need what we need for life to exist.
Yeah, no, I agree. Plus, who's to say that anything else that's living on another planet is fucking bothered?
Yeah.
If they want to come and...
Exactly.
Like, guys, you're really ruining your spot. Good work with that.
Yeah, they're watching us going,
We're bending space and time over here. You get on with,
Meanwhile, they're picking up our old radio shows and they're onto the old jazz time that John Hammond would put on in the 40s and shit. They're just like, you think those use electricity? I'm not really sure. I'm not convinced.
Yeah. We've really gone off topic.
We really have. But that seems to be our MO, so it's fine, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So,
So in conclusion, I do like ice cream, and I support its different flavors.
Nice.
So yes, yes.
I can't eat it.
Yeah, really? Yeah, you get the lactose thing.
No, I'm just vegan.
Well, that's even worse, really. So, I know, right? I mean, that's fine.
I'm not that guy that goes around, though.
Yeah, the vegan Nazis.
Yeah.
I hate that look. I cannot stand that look. Yeah. It makes me want to just eat a burger right in someone's face, just and get grease on them and really just ruin their day. I'm that guy, though. Like, I'm not going to shit on the way you eat. Don't shit on the way I eat, okay? Yeah.
I'm a bad vegan anyway. I wear leather.
Well.
And these shoes, man.
Yeah.
By the way.
Brutal?
It's like, I feel like James Caan in Misery. It's killing me.
Oh, you got the cobble going on.
Yeah.
You see these? These are my old school Air Jordans.
Nice.
It's the most I've ever paid for a pair of shoes in my life.
How much were those shoes?
A lot.
But you should be this guy. You should be like people lining up going, here, would you like to wear our shoes?
Well, you would think so. But
to wear our colorful floral suits?
Well, there's that too. Moods of Norway did swag me out for the
big ups.
Yeah, for my roast.
Yeah.
Which was pretty rad. Yeah, nice. I went down. My wife picked it out, which was beautiful. It is probably one of the loudest I'd ever worn. It was just between. It was just
that was
between.
A little judgmental.
It was just between the first year and the second year of the Kerrang Awards. Yeah. That's where my roast suit kind of fell, because it was blue and white. Tartan or plaid, whatever you want to call it.
Oh,
it was
no,
that kind
that.
Of print.
Yeah.
But it was fucking neon white and neon blue. And I looked the shit. I looked pretty good. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought you
and then I had baby blue chucks to go with them, low tops, set it off. It was beautiful.
Do you think you'll be doing more of those kind of things, by the way? I thought you did a really, as an aside, that the hosting thing, you were.
We had a lot of fun. Good. Me and Scott had a lot of fun doing those. And I was trying to figure out how I could get back to do a fifth year, and my scheduling just did not allow for it. Like, I was really struggling to kind of try and figure out how I could do it, and it was weird. But I haven't gotten offered anything else as far as like stuff like that goes.
That surprises me.
Yeah,
you're a natural host.
I am, but I'm also I appreciate that you've recognized that in me. I don't know, man. You know, like at this point,
you got a lot on your plate.
Not only that, but I also got a lot to say, and I've stopped holding myself back from really saying as much as I would like to. And maybe that's a good and a bad thing. Maybe people just assume that I'm too busy, so they don't offer me anything. I will say, I mean, if it was right, I'd totally be into it. Because I got offered.
We're just throwing that out there right now.
Yeah. Well, I got offered the Metal Hammer Germany to co-host that with somebody, and I couldn't do it. Unfortunately,
who was the co-host?
I want to say it was not Udo, but. It was somebody like that. Like, I mean, it would have been really, really cool, you know, but I just couldn't make it work, you know? Yeah. And I was offered Metal Hammer UK with Jericho to co-host that, like, a few years ago.
Man.
Yeah, he's so good.
He did kill that, but I'm thinking he did the Classic Rock Awards recently.
Yeah.
He was great.
I was going to go to that, and we were on the road or whatever, so.
Yeah, he was cool. Phil Jupitus was at that as well.
Really?
He came up and gave an award to Noddy Holder and was amazing.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's awesome, man. I love Phil. He's so funny, man.
Yeah. Have you ever done stand-up, by the way?
I kind of have in my solo shows.
Yeah.
The show is really it's developed since, honestly, those first two that I did here in the UK. Yeah. I did Birmingham and I did London.
Yeah.
And but the format for the shows really started here, you know? Like, that's when I was doing, like, I threw it out for the Q&A, which, you know, is just kind of, that really kind of sets everything up, you know? But I've gotten pretty good at whatever the theme of the book is, being able to kind of tie a monologue together beforehand. Because I would, sometimes I would just read from the book and I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give people extra stuff. And then they buy the book and they'll get, you know, just as much, you know?
Yeah.
But I got offers, honestly, from Live Nation. They were like, we could book you for a month at different comedy clubs. And I'm like, okay, freeze. Here's the problem with that synopsis, all right? It's easy for me to walk out into a room full of my fans who know exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if I could walk into a comedy club cold.
Yeah, where it's
in front
it's
of
like,
a crowd who doesn't know me. And that's why I have...
We come here every day.
Yeah.
Or every week.
Yeah.
We know what we like. Uh-huh. And you're the guy that's now...
Shit on that.
taking a step into our world.
Well, and that's why I have such respect for comedians, like stand-ups. Yeah, because they probably have one of the hardest jobs on the planet.
I can't even imagine.
Especially when you're on this side of the fence. I mean, once you've crossed over, your crowd knows what to expect, you know? And... your name is synonymous with a certain brand of humor.
Yeah.
So the comics that are on, you know, this side looking out, that's the toughest shit on the planet. I couldn't do it, to be honest. You know, I could walk out to people who know me and make them laugh.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could do it cold in a crowd who has no fucking idea who I am, you know?
Yeah.
I'd have to spend 15 minutes just explaining to them, yes, I am famous. I promise I'm famous.
Well, I could just go, so he's done this.
Exactly.
He's done this. He's done this. Now he's going to be funny.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a difficult gig, man, you know?
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It really is.
Like, I can't, but then you've done a bunch of one-man shows. The concept of getting up on stage with just an acoustic guitar and just doing it like that, I find petrifying.
Oh, those shows are 3 hours long too, man. Like, that's what people don't realize. Like, I do an hour and a half of babbling and then I play for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Like, it's fucking crazy. That the Yahoo stream that I did for the last show last year on my book tour was almost 3 hours. Like, it was just at 3 hours. I was like, holy shit. And that was probably one of the best shows of the tour. Like, it was almost like kismet. Like, it was just meant to be that good, you know? And we had so much fun that night and just talked so much good shit. And then we played, me and my buddy Jason, who I've done the acoustic stuff with for years. We had great set. Everything sounded good. And then we had a bunch of people come out and do guest stuff. Like, it was a lot of fun. So, but maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm so comfortable beforehand, because I always know, it's like, if I don't come across in the spoken bit, I know I've got the acoustic stuff that I can fall back on, you know. It's just like, you're tired of listening to me, let's play some music, you know.
Yeah, that must be such a weird dynamic compared to like playing with the Knot or
Stone Sour. Honestly, it's the closest I've ever gotten to pure joy in my life, to be honest. I mean from what I do, nothing's going to take away from like family and friends and just hanging out and doing stuff like that. But those shows, because maybe this is the ego in me, like it's all about me and I don't have to worry. Sometimes as a front man, if you care about the guys you're in a band with, you worry about, am I saying too much? Am I not getting to the songs quick enough? You know, like you have to, especially if you care about the guys you're in a band with.
Yeah.
Because everyone's in such a different mindset when they're on stage. Some guys are just total adrenaline. Some guys are just stoked and ready to show off the cheekbones, you know?
Yeah.
So you really have to balance it, man. You know, it's weird, you know? So the solo shows, I don't have to worry about anything other than me.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not I'm entertaining the audience. And for me, maybe the challenge is why I get so much joy out of it. Yeah. It's like, can I hold your attention? Can I, me, just myself, hold your attention for this amount of time and then walk away feeling like, God, I could have done better, you know? So I love it. It's so much fun. You know, the only thing I think that would be even better is if I put a whole band together and just did something completely different than the other two bands, you know?
Yeah. Have you thought about that? I mean, you you listen to a huge variety of music. You know, we've talked about it loads of times. So do you ever feel like you've almost not painted yourself into a corner, because I don't mean it like that, but do you feel that other people's perception of what you do will not allow you to do those things?
No, I don't worry about that at all, to be honest. Just for the fact that if I did, I wouldn't do half the stuff that I do, you know? Like, if I worried about it, I wouldn't have done the thing with Tech. I wouldn't have done the thing with Richard Cheese, which was a lot of fun, you know? Like, I honestly do the stuff that I want to do, you know, and I don't really worry about what people are going to say about me.
But then do you feel like doing it as a collaboration is almost like
a way out?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But if I had the urge to do something totally different, I totally would. You know, like I've got various things that I do with some of my friends that hasn't even been released that are completely different, you know. Some of it is very funk based. Some of it is, almost like California country style, like Eagles type stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I just getting to record it and write it doesn't necessarily mean that I need to release it for me to
That's
feel okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, would but I worry must, about releasing
you,
it? No.
You must realize though that people now would, as soon as they're aware of anything, they're going to want to hear it. But then,
well,
but
I mean, you'd be surprised.
Or
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there seems to be a whole group of people just waiting to pounce on anything I do these days. But I mean, who gives a shit? You know, I mean, that's not the reason you make music.
That's
and,
true.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I'm completely okay with it not being released yet. You know, and I'm sure it'll see the light of day someday. But for
how
me,
how much of this is there? Then
I mean, there's at least I mean at least an
Seven
album
albums.
An album's worth on both sides, you know, like that's I mean JBKB started out as my disco how did I call it, disco rock stoner funk was how I put it, you
my
know,
favorite of genres.
with a pinch of Zappa in there, you know, from a lyrical standpoint.
Nice.
And it was all just kind of taking the piss, you know, but the music was really, really cool, you know. And, you know, I had, you know, I was playing guitar with another guy. We had a bass player who could funk the shit out of it, really good drummer. We had a whole brass section that was really fucking cool.
Wow.
And then a totally different singer who could sing falsetto like nobody's business. Like, it was really cool. So that kind of stuff, man, was a lot of fun to work with. We never went into a studio and recorded anything, though, because it eventually just kind of became my solo band that I was touring, like just kind of doing off shows with.
Yeah.
And once it degenerated into that, I just kind of lost interest with whatever, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever, I'm not sure, I'm not aware if you have already, but have you ever considered writing for other people?
I've done a couple times.
Yeah. Because you can write a hook, man.
Well, you know, but it all comes down. Like, the thing I've realized about me is that I can write a hook for me because I know specifically how I want to sing it.
Yeah.
The times that I've written for other people, it doesn't come off as such, you know. Like, and 9 times out of 10, I will give the benefit of the doubt to whoever I'm writing for that they can write the lyrics, you know, like, and kind of be able to take, cause I never want to feel like I'm stepping on someone's toes creatively. Yeah. I always want people to feel like they're kind of a part of the process. So I haven't really had I don't want to say a bad experience, but I just, for me, it's like, I kind of got to the point where it's like, you know what? I know I'm not going to be a Linda Perry here, so I'll just kind of just keep these songs for myself, and whether some of them see the light of day or not is completely different, because I mean there's a lot of stuff that I've written that is completely, I don't want to say left field, but it's definitely not it doesn't feel like Stone Sour or Slipknot. So, you know, maybe someday if I find the right artist, I'll just be like, here's a bunch of tunes, go make some cash, you know.
I think it can be quite a gratifying thing, having done it myself. I enjoy it because it's almost like your filter, or for me anyway, your filter's where you're like, oh, I couldn't sell this.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I couldn't do that. I don't think I could do this the justice it needs. And then at the same time, you give it to somebody else, and then it's like,
and it just kind of blossoms.
Yeah, and it's like go off into the world. And
now the one tune that is out there that I wrote for another band was for Hailstorm.
Yeah.
And it was a it was an extra track for the special edition. It was called "Tell Me Where It Hurts," and I had written the music, but I didn't write the lyrics. Like, so, I, you know, me and Lizzie kind of, you know, played with that, and it came out. It was a really good, you know, kind of rock tune. You know, it was just really, you know, really fun and really kind of in line with like a lot of the stuff that I just kind of write on my, you know, for my side stuff. But yeah, mm-hmm. it was cool. That's about the only time that I've ever really done something like that. And I even worked with a couple different people who were known for, you know, writing songs and stuff. And it just never got any traction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's early days yet. There's still plenty of time for that.
Oh, well, that's true. You know,
yeah.
When I decide I'm tired of touring, you know, maybe. We'll see.
Do you think you ever will?
Because
the thing is,
you know,
right?
Honestly, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said no. But just now, I'm just kind of starting to, you know, I'm 42. I'm not young anymore.
Yeah.
And as willing as my will is, you know, I'm just beat up, man. You know, I mean, I might as well be 60 in Slipknot years, for Christ's sake. So
it's not like dog years.
I don't know if I would, retire. I might step away from Slipknot at some point just because the way the music is and that sense of energy, I don't know if I could be able to do that into my 50s.
Like it demands a certain physicality. Yeah,
exactly. And I would never want the band to feel like I was holding them back because I just couldn't physically do it. So that means I wouldn't completely quit music. I would probably just step away from Slipknot.
But then at the same time, it could also mean, you know, you guys have made this journey together. So at some point, it could be that would be the thing which makes the band transform in a way that they might not necessarily have done.
Have talked about, me and Clown have talked about that a bit. You know, which is where the band is going to go, because we've done it. You know, we've done the crazy shit. We've done, you know, at some point we'll have to evolve again. You know, because we've evolved with every album.
Yeah, of course.
At some point, it has to mean something other than just the fucking insanity. And I think it, in a lot of ways it does now, but we're all still young enough that we can pull it off physically, you know? So it'll be interesting to see, because I think in the future we'll make it less about the angst and the insanity and more about the creativity, because there's so many creative people in this band that, I mean, fuck, man, we can make, you know, 12 albums of just crazy, gnarly shit. And it wouldn't have to be just balls out war every time. So so it's definitely something we're thinking about. But at the same time, I mean, you just never know. You just never know.
Yeah, it's true. I had this conversation with Greg from Dillinger recently, and
yeah.
I mean, same deal with that band. You know, it is like, as you say, it's just all out war. It's total physical abandon thrown into it. And at some point he was like, you know, that's why, he's doing this new thing, the Black Queen, which is interesting because it's totally the other end of the spectrum. And
really?
It's kind of like 80s pop.
Oh,
With a little, with kind of like a dark, early sort of Nine Inch Nails edge to it, which they're probably loath to say, but I feel that's fair.
It's funny,
I went to see him play the other day, and it's like, you know, this is a guy which would happily, just within the first 3 seconds of a song, run out across the heads of the crowd.
Yeah, and throw, which we've all seen him do.
And throw flight cases around. And yet he was fine. It was like you could see he was finding his groove quite literally,
He
wore it well, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's a great dude, too.
Yeah, man.
You know, he's got so much talent that I'd be interested to see that. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's cool. You should check it out.
I will.
I'll send you a link to the album. It's cool.
I know.
So you say you've got you're going to be touring the US middle of this year?
Yeah. And after that, we've got some, I mean, obviously we're going to do the Knotfest stuff.
How's that?
It's going well. You know, it's doing really well.
Well, I see that. But I mean, how is it from the perspective that it's like all of a sudden you're going from, you know, it's established now and you're doing it in three different countries, right?
Japan. Yeah, as of right now.
Yeah.
Well, soon to be four. because we just picked up a new territory. And I don't know if we've released that yet, so I won't say which one.
I know where it is.
Psychic. Damn it. Knew it.
I wouldn't say.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of taken on it's doing exactly what we hoped. It's taking on a life of its own.
Yeah.
You know? It's a lot of work. I mean, it's definitely worth it, you know. And it's us putting our money where our mouth is, you know, and really trying to wear what we believe in on our sleeve and showing the world that we will back it up, you know. So, and then the great thing about the brand is that people are really responding to it, you know.
I think it's amazing that it's getting made as this immersive thing, you know. It's cool because it only adds to the band. I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and not only that, but it just adds to the experience that we want people to have as far as the band is concerned, you know. So, we just we're doing the Knotfest Japan one in November.
Are you guys sitting down and picking all the bands on that, or
we get a list of whoever is available and whoever has submitted, and we really try to cherry pick as many as possible, at least the top tier, you know, to really kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, it's all good. And a lot of, you know, we've had to turn bands away now. Where, you know, the first year we were putting it together, it was kind of hard cobbling one together, but as it's gone on, people have really gotten interested in it. So it's pretty cool, you know.
Do you keep on top of those things as far as the newer bands go?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the great thing about having kids, you are that certain age, is, I mean, that's your instant tap-in. Yeah. And you're just like, what are you listening to, you know? Mm. And then you listen to it, and you're like, well, that's rubbish. But they're, you know. No, I take that back. Sabbath. No, it's cool, you know. It's really cool, you know. You get a sense of... Because that's what, you know, I mean, that's what metal and hard rock is to me. It's street level, you know, like it will never be replaced by anything on the street, because it's such a street level feeling, you know. It's urban kids, it's suburban kids, it's everything, you know. And that's why I will never go away. People have been trying to kill us for years as far as like metal and hard rock and punk go. Yeah. And we're just never going to go away. I mean, there may be ebbs and flows in it, but it's never going to go away.
I think that's the beauty of it, though, because it's the thing which, you know, that's why it becomes not just a soundtrack, but a lifestyle in the sense, because kids discover it, because it's, you know, it's an identity.
It's exactly it.
And as soon as you find those things, it strikes a chord, and that's you for life.
Yeah, exactly.
For better or for worse.
You know. Yeah, the great thing about it, too, is that it's so flexible that it doesn't have to be such a specific identity. Like, you can really find yourself in it no matter who you are, you know? It's one of the things I was talking, you know, when I was doing the Guardian interview, and we were talking about racism in metal.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest thing was, it's like, I don't really, well, on one, I mean, one hand, you're going to find racism in all forms of music. This isn't just a metal thing. But having played a million shows, having been to a million shows, I can tell you with absolute honesty that metal is not a very racist form of music, because a metal show is very diverse. There are so many kids from so many different places and so many different walks of life, so many different colors, so many everything, that these forms of music are bringing together the misfits.
Yeah, it's inclusive.
Exactly. We have never tried to cut people out, ever. And that's why I think it'll take very little to get rid of racism in metal, because I don't really think it's there in a huge proportion. You're going to find that, you're going to find prejudice in all music, to be honest. So for me, it's one of the things I'm most proud of about metal, is that it brings people together instead of tearing people apart. And that's not to say that there aren't the armchair, you know, metal fascists who, well, you know, they call themselves metal, but this band over here is really, but that has more to do with the bands themselves than it does with the fans, you know? So I don't think it's that big a deal, to be honest.
Yeah, that elitism is a funny thing, man. You know, when you think that
when you get into a form of music like this, where it becomes so all-encompassing in your life, it gets to the point where it then almost fractures. So it becomes like a pissing contest of like, oh, well, I don't like this band because this isn't true to what. And it's like, come on, man.
Well, what does that sound like? What does that sound like? It sounds like religion.
Yeah.
Because think about that. Think about how different. Yeah, but that's the kind of impact that music has on people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, so anytime you get something that is so like that, you're going to get that kind of, that just territorial kind of, you know, this interpretation is completely different than your interpretation, even though it's the same fucking song, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very weird. It's, but at the same time, I still hope that music brings more people together than tears apart, you know?
Somebody needs to.
Yeah. So somebody does need to.
We didn't really speak much about what's going on with Stone Sour after the two EPs.
Which
kind of leads on because, you know, those EPs were almost like touchstones to points that got you into.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got you to this point, I think. Yeah. That's how I interpret it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was cool because we all kind of picked a tune. And we just kind of went with it, you know.
Was there anyone that was like, we need to do this? And everyone was like, meh.
No, we were all really open to it. You know? I mean, in a lot of ways, it was hard to narrow it down. Because we were all so into doing different stuff, you know. Yeah. And we were, originally, we were going to do three. And now it sounds like we're just going to do the two. And then just keep the other stuff that we recorded as extra content from when we make the next album.
Okay.
Because the Metal Church track went up online,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool, yeah. And that was a part of the Fear Clinic soundtrack as well.
That was
cool. And the first one, it was more hard rock and heavy metal, you know?
Yeah.
And the second one, we were really able to kind of branch out a little bit.
Yeah, make you had the
it even more
tuning.
Diverse.
Yeah.
And I don't think we all kind of agreed. It was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to touch the second one because it came out so well.
Hmm.
So we were like, you know what? We've got all this stuff recorded. We'll just hang on to it and we'll use it as B-sides or extra stuff for when Roadrunner releases in Japan. And, you know, because they always ask for extra crap. And it's just like, can't we just give you an album and you just be all right with it? You fucking dicks. So
that's a weird situation there, man.
Oh, you ain't kidding.
Yeah.
But So as far as Stone Sour is concerned, I mean, we're just kind of demoing stuff right now. We're just kind of taking our time because everybody knows what's going on with my schedule.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, just feeling out. I will say that we've got at least 14 songs written right now, just kind of just in demo stage. Like, we haven't played them as a band yet. But it's all really good, man. Like, it's really, really good shit.
It must be tough, man. Like, you know, I'm saying all this stuff, you know, you're doing this and you're doing that. And how are you finding time for this? It must be tough to be in a band with you. That could be interpreted in a really bad way. I don't mean it like that. It's not, I'm not saying you're an asshole, but what I mean is it must be like you know what it's like when you're in a band. You want to just go.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough, you know, but I do a pretty good job of balancing everything with the guys,
you
know.
That's what blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, plus, you know, a lot of the guys that I'm different projects with got other stuff going on, you know. I mean, you know, Roy is doing a lot of soundtrack stuff right now. He's really kind of dipping into that. You know, I mean, everybody kind of, they're pretty, like, and then they'll go out with other bands and tour with them and stuff. And so it's, as much as I hate to feel like I'm leaving them high and dry sometimes, they've also got other stuff going on, you know? So, and I think they, you know, maybe one is because of the other and so forth, but they also know that, you know, when it comes time to work, like, I'm all in. So it'd be different if it was kind of a blasé kind of vibe to it, where it's like, yeah, I'll be around. When I'm in. So that's what it comes down to. Yeah. I hope so. You know, I mean, that's the reason why
an awful lot of half-arsing going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why the quality is still where it is, you know, at least in my mind, you know? Yeah.
Safe. So what, we can't talk about the new venture yet, can we?
No, not right. Not yet. Not yet. Soon-ish. Let's just say I'm involved with something that you've not got
enough going on. You need to do something else, I think.
Yeah, right. Well, at least this I can do in my own time, you know?
I think it'll be great as well.
I'm hoping.
He's an astronaut.
Oh, I am. Or a hemorrhoid. I'm not really sure which one it is yet.
Yeah, amazing.
Either way, I'm going to be a pain in the ass.
All right, well, thank you for that.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you for listening to Swim Podcast Episode 2. Hit us up on Twitter, which is at Swim Podcast. Same on Instagram. Mine is at Daniel P. Carter on Twitter and Instagram. Let me know who else you'd like to hear on upcoming episodes. As I said the other week, I've made a wish list and I'm punishing people now. So hopefully it'll all pan out, all the people I want to speak to, because I think it'll be interesting. A lot of them are from the world of music, specifically from the sort of world of music, I guess, is that I'm best sort of associated with. But also I want to speak to some painters and some artists and just people I think are interesting, because that's what it's all about, right? So hit me up. Let me know what's going on. All right, thanks. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.